place that lets you know you're not the only nerdy true believer who's around. The Comic Book Store, the Comic Book Store, 'cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store. Out among the stacks of new releases, browsing with your future new best friends, you're gonna find a book you'll love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels, titles old and new, you'll find them all, with action figures, board games, toys and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The Comic Book Store, the Comic Book Store, 'cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Source Material Live. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And this week on the Rattledge and Broadcasting Network, we're spending half the time talking about some Star Wars stuff. We're going to be reviewing The Mandalorian Season 2, and then we're going to spend the other half of the week dealing with Cobra Kai. The third season was just put out recently, so we'll be reviewing that. So we're looking at all things Karate Kid. So, as far as comic books go, seeing as we are talking about The Mandalorian this week, I thought it would be fun to check out Ethan Sack's new series, Bounty Hunters, which is part of the Star Wars universe. And it started May of 2020. The in-store date was actually March 11th, 2020. Cover date, May 2020. And the first arc was collected in the trade paperback Bounty Hunters Galaxy's Deadliest, which is what we're going to look at tonight. It was written by Ethan Sacks, as I said. The artist was Paolo Villanelli. Colorist Arif Pianto, letterers Travis Lanham, and there was a bunch of different cover artists. So, you know, as with everything Marvel and DC these days, there were 900 variant covers. I am joined by the most Star Wars of Star Warsiest fans. Yes, sir. He loves the Star Wars. Ladies and gentlemen, from the 411 Ground and Pound radio show, Damn You, Hollywood, the 411 coverage god, my good buddy Robert Winfrey. How do you do, sir?
Okay. I feel compelled to address that particular point you just brought up. For those of you who have never heard me discuss anything Star Wars related before, Mark is doing a bit. I am not a Star Wars fan.
In like 50 words or less, is it just that it's a dopey property and it doesn't capture your interest? Or how does it offend you in some way? Did you like it at one time and then you're like, hey, wait a minute, I'm an adult now. This is for children. I don't like it anymore. Like, what happened here?
Oh, that's a it's not a question I've ever considered at any great length. I mean, anyone of about my age, and I'm in my mid-30s, you know, you came about after the run of the original trilogy was in theaters, and significantly, in some cases, before the prequel trilogy came out. So you're kind of in this dead zone where everyone older than you, especially your parents, in my case, talked about how great this property was and showed it to you, and it probably resonates to one degree or another with everyone, especially the younger you are, the more likely you are to kind of be captured by the sort of world that is presented to you. Then there's this dead period, then the prequels, and I've certainly seen all of the Star Wars movies many times. There were great background noise. I think when I started turning on them in terms of my personal enjoyment was high school at some point. Would have been, if you're looking at the Star Wars chronology, we're talking post-Attack of the Clones. To the shock of no one, that abysmal movie may have, you know, drove a lot of people away. But I just started, I think, not only thinking about film and, you know, not just film, but, you know, film, books, etc. I started thinking about them more critically. And I took a hard look at Star Wars at one point and realized it doesn't really hold up on a technical level. The arguments in its favor are mostly romantic.
Yeah, very much so.
And I don't mean nostalgic in the sense that, oh, you had to be there. Star Wars was an incredibly important movie, not just in the culture that it spawned or the subculture. Star Wars is one of the few movies from the 70s that ended on a hopeful note. If you've never watched a lot of film from that period of time, optimism was not big on their list of themes.
I want people to do this. Get up in the morning, and if you're already feeling okay about yourself and about life, have a good breakfast. Sit down and see if your mood at the end of three movies is the same as when you started up. Watch Dog Day Afternoon, The Deer Hunter, and Deliverance. All movies from the 70s, and see if by the end of that you're not walking into traffic.
Those would be some of the more obvious ones. You know, Easy Rider can get thrown in there, that did not have an especially optimistic outlook on life.
No.
Point being, there's a lot of them, and those are wonderful, wonderful films, but, you know, again, more pessimistic, depressive, realistic, however you kind of want to categorize that. And along comes Star Wars with unapologetic optimism at a time when the film industry needed it.
Yeah.
So it holds a very special place in a lot of people's hearts. And when I say the arguments for it are romantic, nobody goes out of their way to talk about what a great story Star Wars is. It's a bog standard story. Some people might talk a little bit about the world building, which, okay. Lucas just built a very broad world and let people's imaginations fill in the blanks, and then didn't sue anybody for playing around in his sandbox.
Well, he's not J.R.R. Tolkien or anything, but I think what he did was build a fantasy world that people could escape to at a time where people wanted nothing to do with real life. And I think that Star Wars' lasting quality, especially now because of how expansive it's become, is that this is a place you can escape to. I think that's actually everyone's complaint right now about the Kathleen Kennedy Star Wars is you took the fantasy that I tried to escape to and turn it into a place I would never want to go.
And I think fundamentally that's a very valid complaint about the sequel trilogy, which in addition to numbers 7 and 9 are just such terrible movies on every conceivable level, almost every conceivable level. I don't think there was a fundamental understanding of fantasy, to the shock of no one, considering J.J. Abrams' involvement. Star Wars is not science fiction. It's been said many, many times. The movies proper, they're not sci-fi. They're fantasy set in outer space. It's not that difficult a concept to grasp, but apparently everyone has 8 billion ideas about, well, what if it wasn't? Well, then it's not really Star Wars, is it? And again, I'm not a Star Wars guy, so... I suppose that's the other thing about if we're talking about Star Wars. It's a place to escape to. It is a setting that people want to get lost in. And there's a couple of different places like that that other people that resonated deeply with some people that just didn't for me. You know, Earth 616 was never my place to hang out. Mentally, neither was A Galaxy Far, Far Away, nor take your pick. There's any number of them that you could choose. That one didn't resonate with me. Middle Earth, the Wizarding World. Those weren't places I mentally escaped to. I had other places I went. It wasn't really there. So I don't have the same emotional attachment to it that other people do. And... given that most of Star Wars' appeal is, again, kind of the romantic/emotional, when you don't have that, there's not a lot there. Not to say nothing, but there's not a lot.
So, another question I have for you, kind of Star Wars related, but not really. Are you actively reading comic books these days? I know that you've been on this show before. I know you have read comic books. I don't know what your relationship to the comic book industry was in 2021.
Well, considering 2021 is all of 18 days old as we record this.
Uh-huh.
I've said this before, and I'll probably wind up saying it again. I don't read a lot of them kind of my own volition, and that's not a... It's an odd thing to say when you come on, you know, source material. I'm not knocking it. This is not me looking down my nose at it. This is not me dismissing it as an art form at all. I just never, for any number of reasons, be it, you know, personal disposition, finances, various other logistical issues pertaining to my childhood, I never spent a lot of time reading comics as a kid. And that's kind of a hobby that I won't say no one comes to later in life, but the majority of people who are really enthused by it find it early in life, and that love just kind of is nurtured and grows. I never had that when my mind and my emotions were a fertile place. So at the moment, what I do is a lot of observation. I have a lot of friends, you know, like you, Jesse. I listen to the Source Material podcast as an effort to support everything that we do here because I am a good soldier. And I have a lot of friends or acquaintances who do talk about them. So I absorb a lot of information kind of, you know, osmotically, second or third hand. And I will read them on occasion for deliberate compare and contrast to other material I'm doing. Or, as was the case here, when Mark sends up the bat signal and goes, "Help! Help! Help! Help!" And I say, I fall on the sword. I will. That's one of my jobs here. I am like permanently on deck.
Which we certainly appreciate. So we are also joined by recently my usual partner in crime, who isn't Alexis Haynes. It is in fact Chris Sheehan. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me, and sorry for the little delay there.
It's fine. We're just talking sort of general Star Wars conversation. I was talking to Robert about his relationship to the Star Wars property, since we're talking about bounty hunters tonight. And sure. You know, Robert, as he was just talking about, not the world's biggest fan of the property. It's just not one of those things that, you know, tickles his nipples the way it does everybody else. How about you? What's your relationship to the Star Wars property?
Me and Robert have something in common. I'm not the hugest Star Wars fan. I was a pretty big fan when I was very, very little. You know, I was born in 79, so I mean, right as Star Wars was a thing, right? And I was into the what I call the real movies, the first three. I was big into those. Had the toys, had the video games, had all that stuff. Totally fell in love with the property, at least in that little corner of it. As things changed in the 90s and into the 2000s, I couldn't care less about any of it. I'll play the Lego games, but that's about the size of it.
Those Lego games are a lot of fun. I have definitely played all the Star Wars ones. I've played the DC ones. I've dabbled in a few others, like Pirates of the Caribbean and Indiana Jones, but I don't think I ever finished them.
Yeah, there are a lot of hours in those games. There's a lot of stuff to uncover, and I usually run out of steam like 70% through. It's like, okay, I've seen enough.
Well, you have read shit tons of comics in your time. Marvel had the IP way back in the late 70s, early 80s. There was a run of Marvel Star Wars comics. Then Dark Horse had it. Then I'm not entirely sure if they were still publishing comics. But ever since Disney bought Marvel and then Lucasfilm, there have been a slew of new Star Wars comic books published by Marvel. Have you read any of the old ones, any of the Dark Horse ones, and have you read any of the new ones?
I read a few of the old ones. The old ones were a lot of fun. but were kind of hamstrung because they came out before Return of the Jedi, I believe. So they might have even come out before Empire. So Marvel was kind of handcuffed as to what they could do, because they couldn't ruin things that were going to happen, and they couldn't contradict things that were eventually going to happen either. So you'd get like that giant green bunny who was like added to the cast for a little while. You'd get like weird stuff like that. And it was ultimately a lot of fun. I wasn't too keen on the art for it, but decent enough. Dark Horse, the first few Dark Horse series I did read.
Oh, everyone read Dark Empire.
Dark Empire, there you go. I think we even did a Cosmic Treadmill on it. We did a Cosmic Treadmill on the Marvel stuff, too.
I was going to say, everyone's done Dark Empire. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
There's a handful of things that are part of the EU, the Extended Universe, that, like, that everyone loves and put up on pedestals, and Dark Empire is one of them. The other one is the Thrawn Trilogy of novels, which were the original novels published post-Return of the Jedi... that started the slew of novels that came out. And I bring that up because Thrawn is a name that got thrown out in the second season of The Mandalorian, and everyone, like, you know, especially after the announcement from Lucasfilm that EU was going to be designated Legends and not canon. So there was no Thrawn trilogy, no Jason and Jaina, no Bosk, or whatever, Yuuzhan Vong, that's who it was. None of the stuff from the novel, none of the stuff from the comics, no Shadows of the Empire and whoever the gangster villain is in that book. I've read one or two of these. Does it show?
Just a bit.
So everyone sort of threw poop at their computers and, you know, in various screens when that announcement was made. So that they've reversed course. And now they're including Thrawn, and he's got a comic book, and he's in the show, and all of this other stuff. People are like, woohoo! Yay, Jon Favreau!
Can I just very briefly... There's a reason they said we have to throw all of this out. Because while everyone... You mentioned there's a few things that everyone likes. And getting Star Wars fans to agree on anything is a bit like herding cats. So the fact that there's a handful of things that everyone goes woohoo over... Of course they're going to get incorporated. But look at how much crap there is in the EU as well. There is a lot of it.
Look what I just rattled off.
You have to throw all of it out. But you tell everyone that's making stuff, hey, everybody loves these. So if you want to use any of these, we'll make sure that, you know, all the rights and such are appropriately acquired so you can... But none of this is canon because you don't want... I mean, look, I'm not going to bag on Kathleen Kennedy too much here, but you really don't want that poor woman to be doing the Charlie Day thing from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, just trying to plot out the course of events. And she's up there with the conspiracy board and all the red string, just trying to figure out who's where at what time. No, it's ridiculous.
Well, golly, Robert, they certainly tried, because if you'll recall when Disney bought Lucasfilm, I don't know if Sheehan knows this, they actually said that anything pre the Lucasfilm sale to Disney was Legends and was not canon and exists in a parallel universe that we're never going to look at. That was the announcement. They said everything going forward, and I brought this up actually when we reviewed Rise of Skywalker, they said everything going forward was going to be integrated. That included comic books, roller coasters, like anything that came that was going to be produced that had the Star Wars name on it was all integrated, was all canon, was all part of the universe. So like if you went to Galaxy's Edge at Hollywood Studios, like that's a place that exists in the current Star Wars universe, and they were telling stories. And there's actually a Galaxy's Edge comic book written by Ethan Sachs, who's the author of what we're talking about tonight, this Bounty Hunter series. So, like, this Bounty Hunter series, Galaxy's Edge, any of the novels that have been published, like Aftermath and all of that, that's all supposed to be canon. And I think that's, you know, and as I was saying before, it irritated a lot of fans that they were coming up with new stuff wholesale and sort of disregarding everything else. And then there was like some question about, but okay, Clone Wars was pre Lucasfilm sale, so are you throwing out Ahsoka and the entire, you know, storyline that happened in Clone Wars. They've since haven't.
The answer to which is no.
Yeah, they're like, no, we're including that part. So, you know, they are trying to create this really immersive universe that exists in all these different places, and to the degree that it's successful, one, you know, your mileage may vary too. They are struggling uphill with a public that's just, you know, not always into their conception of Star Wars. Like, The Mandalorian was a big hit, and is a big hit, and definitely won favor back from the fan base, but the three movies that have just come out, and I don't know how popular these comic books are. You know, I don't know how popular the comic books are. I don't know if the books are selling. I know that there's definitely an element of the fan base that's like, nothing from this product anymore. Nothing. we only like The Mandalorian. The rest of this could piss off.
We'll see how much that particular love as well persists through the 18,000 spinoffs coming your way in the next 5.5 months.
Yep, 15 some odd shows and a movie. Hashtag.
No joke.
No. Really? No. That's not an exaggeration.
Wow.
So they did an investor call.
You've got The Mandalorian Season 3. Between Season 2 and Season 3 of that is going to be set the Boba Fett chapters. There's an Ahsoka series. We have like a Bad Batch series about, you know, the rebel stormtroopers whose conditioning didn't take, blah, blah, blah.
Correct.
There's the Kenobi series. I'm forgetting at least three.
Yeah. There's a bunch.
There's a bunch.
But yeah, they did an investor call about a month or so ago. I want to say it was like late November, early December.
November.
Yeah. And on this call, Sheehan, they talked about how basically they hadn't completely abandoned feature motion pictures, but that there was going to be this tidal wave shift to streaming on Disney Plus and Hulu. Okay. And to prop all that up, there were 900 Marvel shows coming. They were shifting some of their theatrical releases to Disney Plus, and in one case, making you pay $30 for it. Oh, geez. And then they announced this. Then they did the Lucasfilm presentation, and it was like, yeah, we're gonna do like 15, and that's not an exaggeration, 15 live action and animated Star Wars shows, and one straight to Disney Plus movie directed by the gal who just did the Wonder Woman sequel.
Is there going to be a tipping point where everyone just says too much? Is that something
about
you see happening?
About 6.5 months ago.
There you go.
What's your impression of the Star Wars comic, Sheen? I know you're somewhat tapped into what people are into these days and what they're not into. Are people talking about, is there any buzz on these Star Wars books?
Well, usually I just go with what I like and then pick the exact opposite for what's actually cool and what people actually care about. But the only thing I know about these Star Wars books is that the first Marvel issue that came out, what, like 2017? Mm-hmm. Whenever they got the license back. The one that had like 70,000 variant covers. People seem to love that one, but they stopped talking about it after that. I hang out in the quarter bins a lot, the 50-cent bins, the cheapo bins. It's one of the places I like to hang out, and it never fails that I can go into one and I can find stacks and stacks of Star Wars number 4, Star Wars number 5, because of all the variant incentives, where a poor retailer has to buy 500 copies of Lando number 3 to get like a sketch cover, a sketch variant cover. And so all these Lando number 3s they bought are thrown in the 50-cent bin. So that's what I'm seeing. That is basically all that I'm seeing. I'm not hearing much of a buzz of any sort here. It's just every time I see an ad that features Star Wars comics, it feels like they're published. They multiply. I mean, that is a Marvel thing. You know, they do glut every single property that they go with. You have 50,000 Spider books, 50,000 X books, and it looks like we have 50,000 Star Wars books as well. It's just too damn many.
Yeah, they gave almost every character, known character in Star
Wars,
their own book.
Like, who the hell is General, is Aphra?
Okay, that character they made up. Okay. That that character appeared in a Darth Vader comic, if I recall, and then they were like, let's give her her own series because, you know, girls. But yeah, Han Solo had his own series. Chewbacca had his own series. Lando has had two. Yeah, it's we've covered some of them on Source Material for one reason or another.
Serious, who thinks this? Who thinks that much is a good idea? You've got to be losing money. The more
like, afford them all, yeah.
There have no been way three an appropriate financial return on investment for what they're producing with those. There's no way.
There have been three distinctly different Darth Vader series called Darth Vader. By the way. It's not like, you know, it's not like Darth Vader, Emperor's Hand, Darth Vader, and then Darth Vader, Joker's Wild. Nothing. It's none of that. It's just Darth Vader. Like, I remember, like, they, I think, like CBR posted an article about, like, a new Darth Vader comic book, and I have the trades for the first series, and I got them a while back. I think I got them as, like, a Christmas present. And they were like, the new Darth Vader series, Darth Vader, and I was confused as fuck. I'm like, didn't we already do this one? Like,
twice.
He's getting another one called Darth Vader? Not, you know, like, there's, I think, like, a one-shot called Vader's Castle, but that's it. Everything else, they just keep using the name Darth Vader over and over again.
And Marvel doesn't use volume numbers anymore, so Lord help anybody trying to track these things down in the back issue bins.
Yeah, I have to spend a lot of time on, like, Comic Vine and Marvel Wiki to try to figure out what's what.
No doubt.
But Chewbacca's got his own series, so don't worry about that. If you're into, like, the Chewbacca
series. Is that like
series.
I Am Groot? I mean, what does he do? Does he just growl and grunt?
What do you think, Chewbacca?
They translate for him.
Oh, boy.
But you know,
A lot of thought bubbles.
Do they actually use them in there? I mean, that could be a redeeming quality. Marvel doesn't use those anymore.
I genuinely have no idea.
So, yeah. That's what we're talking about tonight, this new iteration of Star Wars books. The most recent ones, as a matter of fact, is, like I said, this one came out in 2020. And weirdly enough, when I was trying to find a book to do to synergize with the Mandalorian review, I was actually looking for, like, a Boba Fett. And there's old stuff. Like, there's, like, old Dark Horse and old Marvel Boba Fett stuff. But you would think with the 9,000 Darth Vaders out there, and a Darth Maul book, and a Dr. Aphra, as you mentioned, you would think Boba Fett would have gotten his own book, seeing as he's like a cult character and, you know, a fan favorite. Nope. This is what you got. Bounty Hunters. By the same guy who did Old Man Hawkeye, which I've also read. Issue number one. Years ago, Valance, who was a new character, and fellow bounty hunters Bosk, Bosk was the lizard bounty hunter from The Empire Strikes Back, and Boba Fett.
He was in the Lego game.
Yes,
that much
was.
I know.
Yep. Took on a mission that went sideways in a bad way after Valance's mentor, Nakano Lash, violently betrayed them. Valance's team barely escaped with their lives. He never thought he'd face his old mentor again until Lash finally resurfaces under mysterious circumstances. Every bounty hunter in the galaxy wants a piece, and Valance is hell-bent on getting to the prize first. He has a score to settle, but so does Boba Fett. So, yeah. Basically, Valance, Bosk, Boba Fett, and a handful of others ran inside this compound, and they were there. They were essentially there to escort the son of a crime lord. He was there to assassinate somebody. They were there to accompany him to make sure he didn't get killed. And they get to the target, whom you don't see at the time in this first issue. And Nakano Lash turns and shoots the son of the crime lord, at which point all hell breaks loose. Somebody else gets shot in the crossfire, and it all goes to hell. And Boba Fett takes this especially personally, because this hurt his reputation. You know, he's a guy that gets things done. He's a dependable person. That's why he has such a high price out in the bounty hunter world. And this is one of the very few missions that did not get accomplished and went to hell. So, all these years later, when the story picks up again, he's, you know, when he has an opportunity to find Nakano Lash, that now that she's resurfaced, he definitely wants her dead. So, let me go to you first, Winfrey. You read this first issue, you read this first five issues. Let's talk about issue number one here. What did you think of number one?
it's never a good thing when you can read the first, in comics, it would be just the first issue. The first, you know, 10 pages. I mean, this is what, like a 22-page issue, something like that, so call it half of that. When you can read that and then immediately track every beat of the following story, that's not a good thing. especially if it's not executed exceptionally well. I mean, look, we're all willing to make allowances that there's a finite number of stories and methods of telling them. Fair enough. But when you're this generic and you're not even, you know, executing it in a way that's interesting, sorry. We don't get to see what causes this famous bounty hunter to turn. Well, I wonder if it might be something that's potentially, you know, morally compromising, like children, or, you know, a bunch of babies, or, you know, a pregnant woman, which is what it turns out to be. And I wonder how, it's just so pedantically paint by numbers. I don't have a whole lot positive to say here. I mean, you got Boba Fett in because I imagine there was just an editor's note that every issue must have a big splash page of Boba Fett looking heroic because Boba Fett. Because there's no other excuse for it. You introduce a new character, Valance, who is a former stormtrooper who was injured. I mean, we find this out a little bit later, but former stormtrooper who's now kind of got the Vader treatment where he's more machine than man. You can read this first issue and you can pick out every character arc, you can pick out every character beat, you can pick out every narrative beat, or if you can't pick it out, if you can't call it 100%, you can call enough of it to just know exactly what's going to happen. You know, the guy who gets killed in the crossfire, oh, it must have been a sniper we missed. And then, you know, you think about that for just a second. Huh, I wonder if it's the pissed off super bounty hunter they're trying to turn into a badass who was pissed off about the mission going sideways. Well, you know, 3.5 issues later, hey, guess what? Sorry, this did nothing positive for me to read. Just nothing.
You don't have to apologize. I get it. This was at best. Hey, Chris. This is going to be one of them. This is going to be one of them. Death of Hawkman type.
I was going to say, where's Adam Strange at?
This is light reading at its lightest. Did you have any thoughts here on issue number one, sir?
You know, I have like no familiarity with any of these characters except for Boba Fett, so it felt like. I mean, this is definitely current year comic book writing, where it's just like, here's a bunch of characters, know them, care about them. I didn't know any of them, and I damn sure didn't care about them. Boba Fett, I really don't care about him either, but I recognized him, so I was like, ooh, there he is. There's somebody I know. And then there's like a crudely drawn Wookiee who I think is a Wookiee. Maybe he's a Sasquatch. I don't know. But it's like the familiar things were the only things that stood out to me, which perhaps was to my benefit because it didn't make the story as quite as paint by numbers as it definitely was. Because I was just, you know, you dazzle them with brilliance or you baffle them with bullshit, and I was baffled by bullshit. I didn't know who any of these characters were. Of course, it is very, very, very boilerplate, you know, moral ambiguity sort of storytelling. But at least it was quick. Got through that first issue real, real quick.
All right, so I'm not going to belabor this by going issue by issue. Here's the... So that we can just kind of have a general conversation about this. So here's what happens issues 2 through 5. As Robert said, this is laid out in kind of a cinematic form in the sense that we keep jumping time. We go a little forward in time with where our characters are now and what they're doing. And then we do like a flashback to give some context, and just kind of goes back and forth like that. So essentially, the job, like I said, the job was accompany this guy to go kill this person. This person ended up being the daughter of a rival crime syndicate whom he impregnated. And Nakano Lash killed him because he didn't want him to kill the woman who was pregnant at the time, as I said. Nakano Lash ended up rescuing the woman who then dies in childbirth. So then she raises the child on her own, and she's gone underground to protect this child. Number one, from getting killed by anybody else. Number two, Nakano is of the belief that if this kid can make it to adulthood, then being the child of two different crime syndicates that are currently warring with one another, this child, as an adult, can somehow take over both crime families, end the war, and make peace. That's her contention. And so now that word is out that she's sort of lifted her head above water, a lot of the issues here in the middle are, where is she, trying to find her, following clues to find her location. A couple of the bounty hunters sabotage each other. It's a raid. Like, Bosk is trying to find her, Boba Fett's trying to find her, Valance is trying to find her, and then there's other bounty hunters getting involved too, and so they're all messing with each other on the hunt for them. And then it finally culminates in the last issue, where they have found her. You get the background on it. You find out that Boba Fett was actually the one that shot the other member of the party, who is a sibling to one of the people trying to find her, et cetera, et cetera.
Tananga, I think it was, something like that.
Yeah.
Could not have had more death flags hanging around her head if you tried.
I just want to go home to my beloved. I just want to go home to my beloved. Yeah, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. So, Valance ends up stopping Boba Fett from killing Nakano Lash. Nakano Lash, I think, ends up dying anyway.
Yeah, their ship gets bombarded by a general from one of the crime syndicates who's potentially the only interesting character they introduce here, and that this general is trying to stop this child from coming into public knowledge, because I don't want what I've built to be threatened. Like, yeah, all right, fine. Generic, somewhat ambiguous there, but hey, you got a mask on, so it could be anybody under there. Could even be a boat.
So yeah, she gets blown up in the ship. The kid and Valance ends up taking possession of the kid and vows to protect her. And now that said general is on the hunt for Valance and the kid, as is Boba Fett, who isn't going to let this go. And that's where the first arc ends. The series continues. There's, I think, a two or three part story that I think this is ending at issue number 10. And so the next trade is two different stories. One is three comics and the other one is two. I don't remember which is which. But that's basically the gist of this thing. Let me give my thoughts on it, and then we'll kind of go around and kick it around for a bit. It's pretty basic. And if you like just sort of a basic crime adventure story, and you don't think too hard about it, and and you like juvenile reading, that's about what this is. I gave it 3 stars on Goodreads. It's fine. It's sort of passable. There's no pathos to it. There's no depth. There's no gravitas. It is literally it's like somebody getting $10 million to do a crime movie, and so they hit all the beats. And they have and they do all the action that they can do with $10 million, but it's nothing special. It's a B movie in comic book form. Sheehan, what are some of your thoughts here about this story?
I mentioned that I liked the first three Star Wars movies, and I remember we always wanted more, and we held Star Wars up on this pedestal because it was so short. You only had the three movies, and you had the droids cartoon and the Christmas special if you wanted it, but you had the three movies. You just wanted more.
Yes, and then we got the two Ewok made for TV movies.
Of course, we did get that too. Battle of Endor, yeah. But then we're getting too much. I mean, I'm looking at this story, and I think partially, my juvenile mind here, my toddler mind, still has Star Wars on this pedestal, where it's only the best stuff, right? It's got to be worthy of the name. Don't care about Star Wars, but I still hold it in high regard. I don't know why. Then we get something like this, and the whole time we're reading this, I'm like, why does this exist? Why did we need to read this? Why does this story need to be told? And it doesn't. It really doesn't. It's between Empire and Jedi, right? Because we saw Han Solo and Carbonite.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do we need to have this? I feel like it the ship has sailed, clearly. You guys said there's like Skatey 800 of these shows coming out. But it's like we're just there's no more distillation to just the good stuff. It's just, let's milk every dime we can get out of this. Let's give Dr. Aphra 15 issues. You know, I don't understand how Star Wars... I can understand why Star Wars fans are annoyed, but I can't understand why Star Wars fans are still buying this stuff. I think people should just be like wiping their hands and being like, it's too much. This doesn't matter. This isn't necessary. You're diluting the product. It's... I don't know. I just don't know. As a story, if this was just a story, you take the title off of it or whatever, it's like you said, Mark, it's a basic story. It's not going to hurt anybody's feelings. It's not going to make anybody mad. It's also not going to rock anybody's socks. It's just something that exists. You take it or you leave it.
Remember they were video stores, right? You go to the video store, and you go through the new release section. You've either seen everything, or they don't have any of the stuff you want to see. So you take a walk a little bit deeper into the video store, and you're like, let me go check out the action aisle. And there's like 100 generic action movies you've never fucking heard of.
Yep.
You're like,
oh yeah,
Death Face looks good. I know one of those actors.
What about Bloodmark and Scarf, Scab Face? Yeah.
Bulletfoot. Hey, you know, I know the director on that one. You know, ooh,
Bazooka ooh. Fist,
Crash Explosion. That's got a really cool cover on it. I'll get that one. Like that's what that's the feel of this. This is Crash Explosion.
Yeah. It is Crash Explosion the 3.
The comic book equivalent of a direct to DVD movie.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead, Robert. Your thoughts on the overall arc of the story, and then we'll start to wrap up here.
Again, you read the first volume, volume issue. I'm sorry, you read the first issue. If you've seen anything like a crime movie in your entire adult life, or even your childhood life, and it's just a vague memory, you will be able to know exactly what's going to happen, exactly which characters are going to do which things. And probably the order in which they occur. It's not especially... Again, it's a very, very generic story. And sadly, there's not even a lot of... There's no style. There's no flair. Even the artwork is about as generic as you could possibly get. No one... There's nothing even in... Again, there's not even anything interesting visually. And some of the poses they put these poor people in... I mean, I get that comic book anatomy is not human anatomy, but people don't bend that way.
You know, it's funny. Comic books, like I think like any other medium, whether it be books, television, movies, you get some where the narrative speaks to deeper issues. You know, I talked about gravitas and pathos and all of that. And, you know, and there's a lot to talk about. Like, Sheen and I have talked about some books where we went over an hour because mm-hmm. there was so much there. You know, Jesse and I, same thing. We've really drilled down into these. You know, you and I, Robert, talking about TVs and movies. You know, we've really drilled down into some of this stuff. Like, we talked about The Boys. You know, as...
We talked about 2.5 hours, give or take.
Yeah, and it wasn't just, like, recapping the show. Like, we talked about a lot, you know, themes. We talked about, you know, its place in American culture, you know, in the narrative and what it's saying, and it's, you know, and it's satirizing American culture and all of that. And then you read something like this, which says zero. It just says, buy me. I have Boba Fett on the cover. That's it. You know. But I think, and she, you know, I wanted to get your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. You know, for someone who reads a lot of comic books, not everything has a deep meaning to it. There is some stuff that's just... It's just candy and popcorn. It's just there to be light reading and entertainment for, you know, and then we've talked about this. We talked about this on the month that I let you pick everything. Boy, are there some people out there that is all they want. Like, there are people who are going to listen to this podcast going, I love this. What the fuck are these guys complaining about? Because sure. that's all it is just action good time. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny because right now I'm doing the current year X-Men stuff, and that started in 2019, summer 2019, that all started, and it was a fairly curated group of books. Because, I mean, it's never just going to be one X-Men book. So there were five solid books that had a reason to exist, and then one that kind of didn't. I'm looking at these Star Wars books here, and I see that there's one that's just called Star Wars. And the rest of them, I could give a shit. And I mean, I don't even care about the Star Wars book itself, but I mean, how do you follow this? Is it all happening at the same time? Is there any sort of cohesion, or are these just the good time action stories that happen off to the, you know, off to the periphery here? If you look at the corner of your eye, you see Boba Fett and a dude with a, you know, with a Terminator face. I don't understand the purpose of this. And I'm struggling to even find anything to say about it because it's just so pointless. It's not offensive, it's just dull.
Jesse and I did the Han Solo series. We did Princess Leia. We did Lando. I think those are the three that we covered. I don't think we've done any of the other new Star Wars stuff. I know he did Dark Empire a ways back, you know, the Dark Horse one, and I don't think we've done anything from the early Marvel years. I know we did the, I know when the Mandalorian came out last year, around that time, we also did something about Jango and Boba Fett, and I don't remember what era of comic books that was. It might have been one of the newer ones, who knows. But the point of me bringing all that up is, that's a common trait with these. We liked Han Solo, we liked Princess Leia, and we liked Lando, and I remember saying about all of those that they were fun, exciting, like, television scripts. Like, these were almost made to be seen on TV. And that's how they felt. They felt like episodes of a television show. And we liked the character presentation. We didn't necessarily think they were very deep.
Sure.
And that's, you know, and that's where this one lies firmly in there. Like, I didn't hate it. Like I said, 3 stars, but it's an episode of television. Like, I could,
it's not a value added series.
No.
Like it doesn't add really to the lore. It doesn't, like you said, no gravitas. And I think with a property like Star Wars, there has to be some sort of stakes there. It has to be something a little bit impressive. And to Robert's point here, the art was just pedestrian art. I thought it was like,
and that's what kills me when they did when Dark Horse had the property. I mean, granted, Dark Horse was all about, like, we're not writing for children. We are absolutely writing for adults. And I would say more often than not, a lot of the Dark Horse stuff was, you know, it might have been gory at times, especially like the Aliens and Predator stuff. But I would say that they went out of their way to give you something to think about. And certainly Dark Empire did.
Hang on. If you're going to do an Alien and Predator story, it darn well better be gory. Otherwise, it's a giant disappointment looking at you, Alien versus Predator movie.
They made a movie about that?
Two of them.
Two?
Oh, boy.
Yep. And the second one is amazing, Sheehan. Watch it with your wife.
To the second one's credit, at least there's decent action and violence. The first one is... the first one is so much nothing.
Like, the first
you get Lance Henriksen, but that's about it.
The first one is boring crap for the most part, shot in a dank, dark cave that you can't see what's going on. But it ends so spectacularly over the top, stupid. It's almost worth it for the ride.
Do RoboCop and the Terminator show up?
Not yet, but that's
coming.
No,
but they
Freddy and Jason.
No, but that's coming.
In all seriousness, if there's not an Alien versus Predator versus Terminator versus RoboCop crossover event, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's all for nothing. Yeah.
All right. And I'm not going to call on you guys individually. Just shout out if you got anything else. I mean, I don't think there's any more ways we can say it. It's just a mess series. So, anything else, guys?
Nope.
I like it when Adam Strange and Hawkman went to RAN and they're looking for the Nth metal. Yeah, one of those.
Terrific. All right, Sheen, what do you got going on in your neck of the woods?
You could pop over to chrisandreggie.podbean.com to find new podcasts every single day, mostly about the X-Men, sometimes about other stuff, but mostly about the X-Men. You can go over to chrisisoninfiniteearths.com to find blog posts and show notes dating back to just about 5 years ago. Every single day there's something there, and has been for 4 years, 11 months, and like 16 or 17 days at this point, so almost 5 years. You can find me on Twitter at Ace Comics if you're interested in seeing me tweet something like once a day.
All right, Robert, go ahead and do your plugs.
All right. You can find me here on a variety of shows on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, some of which I'm advertised for beforehand, some of which I am not. Again, in addition to all my regular duties, I am permanently on deck guy. So you can find me most recently, Mark, Jesse, and I talked about The Boys Season 2, the Amazon television series. It was a long discussion, but a worthwhile one, I think. We have a bunch of stuff coming up, so stay tuned to the Rattleton Broadcasting Network Facebook page to get schedule updates as far as that goes. I am also the host of the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast, so if you're into that sport, you can find that show wherever you find your podcasts. Presumably the same platform that you're listening to this one on, so should be it's an easy search. This last week, Jeff Harris and I got together, first time Jeff had been back on the show in a while. We reviewed UFC on ABC1, and Max Holloway just putting a historic, and I don't say that lightly, historic in terms of volume, if nothing else, beating on Calvin Kattar. We talk about that card. We preview the two events coming up this week, the somewhat forgettable one on Wednesday, and then the big pay-per-view coming up on the 16th, the return of Conor McGregor as he fights Dustin Poirier. These two first fought in 2016. So getting a rematch many, many years later. So you can find our preview of that. And that show is up most Sundays with, you know, again, fights, analysis, breakdowns, news of the week, such as it is in the MMA sphere. So you can find me there if you're interested in the sport. Please do tell all your friends, tell all your enemies, tell anyone you think might care. I don't especially have any preference for who you tell. So you can find me there.
You can also catch Robert and I, since there's no MMA on January 30th, we will be doing fight coverage, alternative commentary for the next primetime Fox Network PBC fight, which will feature Caleb Plant versus Caleb Truax.
Caleb Plant trying to make a case for a big payday with Canelo. We'll see if he can do it.
Canelo's got a mandatory coming up. It hasn't been officially announced yet, but it's in the works. It's in the works.
A lot of things are in the works.
Yes, sir. This week on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, as I mentioned before, we're reviewing The Mandalorian Season 2. Chris Bailey and I are reviewing Impact Hard to Kill, and it certainly is, featuring Kenny Omega. Myself and Sean Comer will be doing an on-trial for The Karate Kid 2010, starring Jackie Chan and Jaden Smith, who my son thought was a girl, which is hilarious.
Most insightful thing your son has ever said.
Halfway through the movie, he's like, "Wait, that's a boy?" I'm just like, "What?" By the way,
you just thought like four Chinese people randomly picking on this poor black girl.
I'll tell you what, The Karate Kid 2010, not a hard movie to understand, but for some odd reason, my son had some difficulty with it. Like, every 5 to 10 minutes for the first 45 minutes, he was like, "I don't understand what's happening here." What probably would have helped if half of it wasn't in Chinese, but, you know, I digress. Speaking of Chinese, myself and a host of others will be reviewing the third season of Cobra Kai on Thursday. Last night, myself and Pat Mullen recorded our 14th chapter of the history of heavyweight boxing. We looked at George Foreman The aforementioned Boys shows were last week. We did Boys Volume 2, Get Some, and then Boys Season 2. Myself, Cole Marantat, and Sean Comer reviewed Transformers War for Cybertron Earthrise. And
a lot of Earth in that particular series there, season then?
No. That was... not at all. Which was really surprising. And then myself and Chris Bailey reviewed AEW New Year's Smash. All right, that's everything going on right now. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank the two guys here for helping me out tonight, taking a look at this blasé book. For Robert Winfrey and Chris Sheehan, I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.